Ladies and gentlemen, trees and multiforms, welcome to the podcast.
Robo fucking cop.
As far as I'm concerned, Bruce Willis can go get a bag of dicks. Get off my shit.
Ladies, gentlemen, trees and multiforms, welcome to the show. I am your host, Ethan, and of course with me is the Jekyll to my Hyde, the Tom Hanks to my Spielberg, it is, of course, Aaron.
I think I'd be more the Hyde, but, you know, hello, how are you?
Would you be the Tom Hanks or the Spielberg, then?
I mean, I'd probably be more like the Tom Cruise to his Spielberg.
Oh, yeah,
but
true.
I don't know. I don't know.
Hey, we got Minority Report out of that, so that's fine.
That's good. Yeah, that's true. I like that movie.
This is, of course, our year-end show. We're talking about the movies we all saw in 2015. So, of course, we can't be doing that show without longtime friend of the show and friend of ours, Ed Douglas.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Yeah, this is, I don't know how many years we've been doing this, but it's always
Fourth year.
Fourth year. Nice. Okay.
Something like that. It's been a while.
It's cool, the universal constant of the show is the show with Ed.
Yeah. Yes. We like it.
Well, I think it'd be 50, I mean, more than that, because I think the first year we did it was Green Lantern year, and that was 2011, I think. So 11, 12, 13, maybe our fifth year.
Wow. You're probably right. You are right. Now you're saying that. No, you're right. Wow. Time flies.
We get senile in our old age, so we forget
apparently
about that.
Apparently so.
We all have kids now, and are married, and
all that good stuff. Well, let's go ahead and dive into it. It's been an interesting year for us, obviously. We don't get to record nearly as often as we used to or as we'd like to. We all have lives. We all have interesting, wonderful things. I do believe that the number of movies that Aaron and I have seen combined do, of course, pale in comparison to the ones that you have seen, Ed.
And also I don't have live either. I actually quit my job since last we talked, so I don't have a job.
Wow.
Or a life. So I'm nothing but time. So
yeah, I remember seeing something about you posted something about that. So you're no longer affiliated with what was it, comingsoon.net or any of those?
I'll probably still do stuff for them. I'm not only there. I'll be doing stuff for other places now too.
Okay.
That's good.
A couple other places I'm writing for. But The Weekend Warrior right now is dead in its current, in its former 14-year guys. So, part of the thing is I didn't want to do that anymore because or at least not for a while anyway. I needed a break.
Yeah, okay. I can see it getting old.
Yeah. Well, what are your guys' thoughts on movies that came out this year? I mean, what is the overall theme of this year? Is sort of going back to the well, I guess. We have a lot.
Well, it was
of,
like it was this nostalgia and journalism. I feel like nostalgia was big, and then journalism was like in. There's at least five movies about journalism. Again, I don't know how many of them actually got out there that much, but I mean, people were really into writing and doing movies about journalism.
Yeah, it's that longing for all the president's men. You know, I guess.
Yeah.
Captain America: Civil War hit a nerve with some people.
Yeah. No, not Civil War. Winter Soldier.
Oh, Winter Soldier. Yeah, sorry, Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Yeah, that was all the President's Men of the
Marvel
universe.
Yes.
My only real opinion is I don't have one. Yeah, there's a lot of nostalgia going on because we had a Jurassic Park movie, we had a Star Wars movie, and et cetera. I didn't really catch the journalism thing. The only real journalistic movie I saw this year, which actually isn't on my list and I forgot about until just now, was that one movie with I think it's called True Story or Crime Story or something like that with James Franco.
True Story.
And
that was one of the forgotten ones. That was sort of like, that was at Sundance last year. And I remember I really liked it there, but it kind of came and went. It really got lost in the shuffle as did End of the Tour, as did Truth, as did a lot of them, actually. Spotlight's the only one which got any attention.
Of course, as we're doing this, I'll be making several notes of movies that I need to see.
I mean, if you want to, you can watch that movie. I don't know how highly I recommend it. I'm just saying that it is a thing that happened. So,
I like True Story. I like True Story.
I liked it okay. To me, it felt like James Franco and Jonah Hill reminding us that they both have Oscar nominations and why. But, which is fine. But, at the same time, I don't know. It was okay. I mean, I didn't mind it at all.
I liked it. I mean, I think if they released it later in the year, I think it would probably be in the conversation.
But when did it come out?
February?
March,
a long time ago.
March, a while ago. Yeah. It was at Sundance. It was at Sundance, and then it came out after that. So did Into the Tour, and Into the Tour hasn't really caught on either. So
yeah. So that's what I'm kind of saying is, you know, I did catch on to the nostalgia, didn't really catch on too much to the true story. And I think I figured it out that I've seen like 19 or 21 movies or something like that, and half of which are kids movies and or stuff I didn't particularly care to see. And so, like, I feel like I look at my list and I'm like kind of, I mean, I hate to say I'm ashamed of it, but it's just kind of like it's a tour of what is popular. Mm-hmm. And like whatever, but I mean, it is what it is. I'm making a list based off of what I've seen, and yeah, it just happens to be what I've seen, but I don't really have any huge, ones on here. So it's just,
yeah,
it is what it is.
I got to see all of the, most of the staples here and there, you know, obviously the Star Wars, the Jurassic Parks, those movies coming out, and Avengers, obviously, but I surprisingly enough got to see a few movies that are probably going to be that are up for Golden Globes and probably going to be up for Oscars here and there. I sort of got a last minute glut in the last week or two. So,
I should warn you guys. I think the highest grossing movie on my list, at least my top six anyway, is made $25 million. That's the
sweet.
Yeah, so where I'm sure a lot of your movies made that in the first day. So.
Yeah,
probably so.
Whereas we are the armchair critics. You know, Ed, of course, has his finger on the pulse of other things and gets to see all of those obscure movies that we all take note of. Go, oh, we should check that out.
Great, yeah.
I'll say this for last year, Ed's number one movie of the year was Whiplash, and after Whiplash, we did Whiplash, all right, he named that, and I saw Whiplash. I agree with him. Mm-hmm. And, Whiplash was my favorite movie last year too. I just hadn't seen it by the point we'd done the show. So
you guys always surprise me actually, because I think in past years I felt like I've seen movies that you guys hadn't seen, and then I find out you actually had seen a lot of them anyway. So
well, I bet you that isn't going to happen for me this year, but we'll see, I guess.
With family comes responsibility, and with responsibility comes seeing Minions about 12 times a week. So.
Oh, sure.
It is my daughter's favorite movie.
That's wow. Too bad. Okay. Yes. How old is she now?
She's two.
Two. Okay, wow. Okay. Good to know the demographic. Good to know the demographic for that movie.
She loves her some Minions, let me tell you. But, of course, you know, let's
could be worse.
Yeah, it could be worse. She could love Uwe Boll movies.
There you go. That'd be funny, though. I mean, that'd at least be a good story. My 2-year-old loves Uwe Boll, and he challenged her to a boxing match or something like that.
Can you imagine if Uwe Boll started making, like, kids' movies? Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
It might actually have his biggest success ever. Right?
I saw some announcement from him just the other day that his next movie is his last. So,
okay.
Mercifully going to exit filmmaking.
I've never seen any of his movies, and it wasn't intentional.
The cinematic world, but you didn't exit already? What?
Huh?
Yeah, I know.
You're still here?
I thought he was gone, too. I haven't seen a movie from him in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's had movies, it's just they just don't screen them anymore.
Yeah, there's no point.
Like, Love Uella, have you seen that one? No.
No.
Assault on Wall Street?
No.
Auschwitz.
No.
Auschwitz on his, no. Last movie I saw of his was Postal, I think. 2007.
Yeah. I think that's the last movie pretty much everybody saw of his.
Yeah, but he's maybe judging by his growth. Auschwitz. I gotta look into Auschwitz.
Oh, I'm sure it's classy.
Yeah. I'm sure it's sensitive, too.
Yep. All right, well, let's go ahead and get into this with those caveats in place, you know, and for those who are unfamiliar with the format of these types of shows, we do our top six, but of course we all have top 10 lists. We're going to actually discuss the top six of all of our lists, and if there's overlap, we'll deal with that, and then at the end we'll give a rundown of all 10 of our top 10. So we essentially have our top six plus four runners ups, I guess, is the best way to go about it. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and start with you, Aaron.
Okay, my number six movie of the year. Understand that it seems like the last, I don't know, 10 of these shows I've done, I've said something about my list being fluid. And that's kind of happening again now. And I have my number one locked down, but that's about it. So for my number six, I'm just going to grab one that that I'm choosing because it made me angry that everybody told me how much it sucked, and when I saw it, I kind of liked it. And that movie that I am talking about is actually Chappie. That movie that I don't remember his name now. The director, Jesus. It's not Jesus,
Jesus,
but somebody like
that.
No, it was
Neil Blomkamp.
Neil Blomkamp.
I liked that movie. A lot of people said that Chappie was annoying. I kind of thought that they missed the point. I thought that the robot was supposed to be annoying. And I enjoyed it. I don't know about all the de-ant work stuff going on, but I guess it was a reality. But I enjoyed watching it. I like the effects, and I've always liked the feeling of his movies. So that's my number six.
Excellent. I haven't actually seen that one. I'm a big fan of District 9. So, I mean, that's one I wanted. Actually, I enjoyed Elysium just fine. So Chappie was one that I really wanted to see and just haven't had a chance to. So, and it's one that came out early in the year. It was a February March release, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like March, I think.
Yeah. So it slid in under the radar, but for me, and I didn't get a chance to get out and see it. But it had had Wolverine in it, didn't it?
Oh yeah, Hugh Jackman played him, a Canadian, Australian with a what is the haircut called with the one that Joe Dirt has, the what do they
the
call
mullet?
Those? A mullet, yes, he has a mullet in the movie.
Business and, up front, party down the back.
Exactly, yeah. Actually, I didn't hate the movie. I actually didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I was kind of mixed on it. I think I liked it more than Elysium, though. But and I liked the South. He has a couple South African rappers who are sort of like the stars of the movie. And actually, he thought they were kind of funny. But
nice. I haven't seen it yet. Ed, what about you? What was your number six?
Okay, I'm gonna go about as obscure as you can get. I have a few pretty obscure choices here, but my number six is Phoenix, which is a German movie I saw in Toronto actually in 2014, but it finally got released in 2015, so I only include movies once they get released. Phoenix is a movie set after World War II, right afterwards. It stars Nina Hoss, who I don't know if you've seen a Most Dangerous Man, the Philip Seymour Hoffman movie, but she stars in that. But she basically plays a woman who was turned into the Nazis and went through an ordeal. And one of the things is she lost her face, was either cut up or something, but she had facial reconstruction surgery. And so she returns to Berlin and kind of what runs into her ex-husband, mm-hmm. who turned her in, and he basically doesn't know it's her.
I need you to be quiet.
But,
sorry.
But, no problem. But so she basically returns home. He doesn't know it's her, but she looks enough like his ex-wife that he tries to use her to convince her family to get the money for them. So it's kind of interesting. It's a thriller in some ways, very Hitchcocky in some ways, but it's got the presence of, you know, post-World War II Germany.
Right.
It's a beautiful film. I mean, her performance is just absolutely amazing. It's called Phoenix. It's been played in Toronto, and I think that was the only festival, and it really kind of got a lot of attention there, but it got kind of just thrown out there by IFC. It didn't get any kind of awards push at all. I mean, it really just got dumped. It was not, you know, but I think people who see it love it. I think everyone I know who's seen it has made it their favorite movie of the year, so.
Okay, interesting. I remember seeing some sort of a trailer for it at some point during the year, or seeing something about it pop up, and because I remember the Nazi bit where she's, you know, she has had facial reconstruction and that sort of thing. It at least rings familiar for me. I don't know about you, Aaron.
I've never even heard of it. I mean, I've heard of a phoenix. Like the mythical bird that rises from their ashes and stuff. Beyond that, never even heard of it.
Yeah. I mean it's not surprising. I mean, it really kind of got very low key. But I mean, the thing is it has this kind of like old noir feel to it and look to it. It feels like a very classic film. It feels like one of those movies you watch where it's like, if this movie came out in the 40s, it would be like a classic. And I think people who like 40s movies would probably enjoy it as well.
Nice. I'll have to check that one out. Phoenix, it's on the list now.
Very cool.
As far as my number six, you know, I went down and I made my list, and I was kind of surprised where some things fell and some things didn't. But the number six movie here on my list is one that I went to go see in theaters when our boss gave the entire staff a paid afternoon off to go to the Royals parade here in Kansas City after won the World Series, so I promptly went to a movie theater and saw a movie instead. I saw the Martian with the new Ridley Scott movie, The Martian. I think I liked it mainly because I just finished reading the book, actually, and really liked the book, and big Ridley Scott fan, so saw The Martian, and I'm a big fan of those more realistic science fiction stories. So you have that that hard science that goes in there, the realistic science that goes in there. So not the best movie from Ridley Scott, not the best movie from Ben Affleck. I think it's easy to sort of
Ben
say,
Affleck is in that.
Oh, not Ben Affleck. Sorry, Matt Damon.
Oh.
Ben Affleck. Say, oh. Yes, he was Mars.
Oh, all those Boston actors look the same. They all the same.
Yeah, certainly sound the same.
Mark Wahlberg, all that, you know.
He was playing the space shuttle.
There we go.
But the thing about this movie is it's very much trying to be a Castaway, sort of the Tom Hanks Castaway, but with Matt Damon. And there were some aspects of the book that I very much missed from the movie, and there are some aspects of the movie I really enjoyed that they added to from the book. So my number six is The Martian. Very, very easily on my list, the high end of my spectrum. So that's it. That's The Martian.
I didn't see it. I'm going to. I do like Ridley Scott a lot. I like Matt Damon. I have heard that he turns in a really good performance. I've heard people that I don't necessarily trust say that it might be the best performance of the year, and I have my doubts about that, but I have heard that said. I like Ridley Scott a lot. I mean, Ridley Scott is a big draw for me. It kind of struck me as, you know, maybe, you know, Castaway on Mars, but, you know, whatever. And, you know, I like the concept. Have not read the book.
And I would assume that you've seen it, Ed.
Yeah, I definitely saw it. I saw it at Toronto, and I saw it again since then. I mean, I really liked it. It kind of, for some reason, it didn't end up in my top 25. Mm-hmm. It was probably very close, but I definitely liked it. I think it was you know, really well written. I liked the concept a lot, but I mean, there was a lot of things to it that seemed very, I've seen it before, including Gravity, which we've seen very recently, and things like that. So I mean, I thought it was good, a good, well-made film. I love Ridley Scott. I think it's definitely one of his better films, but you know, I like Prometheus more, so I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I mean, I definitely liked it. It just didn't make my list. So
I'm a huge Ridley Scott fan, and the definitely the design of this movie, the visual design was really, really good and really, really cool, and I did feel that at some points that Ridley Scott was kind of phoning it in just director wise, but Matt Damon just was not Tom Hanks quality in it, but it was still good. I still enjoyed it. And I would recommend it off of my list. So that brings us to our number five. Aaron, what's your number five?
If I had a Wayback Machine and I could jump in and I could change orders, I would actually put this one at my number six, because basically the reason for that would be the casualty of, you know, I'm going to have to put something a little bit higher on my list than I necessarily want to, but whatever. I still want to get it out of the way right now, just because I don't want it to be, I don't want this to become too high. But my number three on the list, and it's going, and I'm sorry, number five on my list is going to be, it's kind of going to be traditionally of the show, and I'm throwing in my comic book movie. My number five is Ant-Man. It was the only comic book movie that I saw this year that I particularly liked, and I don't want to sound too shitty about it. As much as I liked Ant-Man, I think I liked Ant-Man more because of following off of Avengers Age of Ultron with it. Mm. I mean, I didn't hate Age of Ultron by any stretch of the imagination, but, like, the bloat and fatigue of the franchise was just really showing. And, like, I don't know, just something.
I liked Ant-Man.
City literally falling out of the sky. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, going from, like a city literally falling out of the sky to the last fight being in a little girl's bedroom.
Yeah.
I liked that. I liked that shrinking of scope. Mm-hmm. And I'm aware of the irony of me saying that about Ant-Man, but I don't mean it ironically. It's just how it happens. You liked Ant-Man, but
I did like Ant-Man. It's my number eight on my list, actually. It's one of those. It's you know, occasionally a Marvel movie or a movie about a Marvel character at least comes out, and you watch it and you enjoy it, and then you see it again and you enjoy it more, and for subsequent viewings you like it even more. Like the Thomas Jane Punisher, it has a special place for me.
Sure.
Anyway. This is like that with me. When I saw it in theater, I was like, that was pretty good. I like that. And I saw it again here at home. I was like, that was actually a lot better than I remember it being. And And I liked Ant-Man. I think really it comes down to, I thought, as with most of the Marvel movies, pretty much they nailed the casting. So they had Paul Rudd doing what Paul Rudd does, and he does it well. So it worked well in the context of the movie, and it's fun to have a little heist movie like that. I mean, throughout the whole movie, you could see echoes of Edgar Wright in there, which was always fun. So definitely
and
an entertaining movie.
Is it Peyton Reed?
Yeah, Peyton Reed.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously will never know what Edgar Wright's movie would have looked like, but I think that given the circumstances, I thought Peyton Reed did real good.
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked it. It was my favorite comic book movie of the year.
Mm-hmm. Ed?
Yeah, I didn't, you know, honestly, I didn't like, I mean, I liked Ant-Man more than Avengers Age of Ultron, because I really didn't like Avengers Age of Ultron. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, Ant-Man was okay. But I thought both the movies of Marvel this year were just kind of like, yeah, they were kind of okay, but like nothing, you know, it wasn't like Thor or Iron Man or Guardians. I mean, I feel like Ant-Man, I mean, Age of Ultron, I didn't like, but I didn't hate it as much as Iron Man 3. But I mean, I think Marvel's getting to the point where they're just using too much formula. Mm-hmm. They're doing these too much to set up other movies rather than really making that current movie good.
Yeah.
Like, Ant-Man just seemed like a prequel to Civil War and to other stuff again, you know, like everything else, so.
But, Ed, when they completely break formula and go outside the box, they make Iron Man 3 and you hate it.
Yeah, well, I thought Iron Man 3 was still fairly formula. I didn't think it was that much.
I think it was that much of a departure.
I thought it was just like, I mean, Age of Ultron just seemed like, you know, it just seemed like Joss Whedon was just like, okay, let me get this over with.
Yeah, I agree.
Ant-Man, I think it had good moments. I've only seen Ant-Man once. I mean, I'd like to see it again. I'd really like to, you know, to see it again to see if I can really. I mean, I watched the first Ant-Man. You know, I had a lot of expectations when I first saw it, and you know, I was disappointed by Edgar Wright leaving, and I feel like it would have been a better movie with him. So
yeah.
It might have been. And allow me to say this, I probably should have at the start of this. The only time I've seen a movie more than once, I will bring it up. So I've only seen one movie on my list more than once, and Ant-Man is not one of them. I only saw it once as well.
Okay, cool. Well, Ed, what's your number five?
My number five is also a fairly obscure movie. It's also a movie I saw at a festival in 2014. But this movie literally played every single festival. So I saw it way back at Berlin, which was February 2014. And then it played Toronto. And then it played Sundance. And then it played Tribeca. It played like every festival before it finally got released. So I ended up seeing it like three times. But I first saw it in Berlin. It's a movie called 71, as in the year 71. It's a movie by a British filmmaker. He could be Irish even. But his name is Jan Demange, and I'm not really sure how he – I think he's French-Irish. I don't know how it works. But it's his first movie, and it's basically about Northern Ireland. And it stars Jack O'Connell, you might know from Unbroken. The thing is that it's a very different look at the Northern Irish conflict than we've seen. And it became one of my favorite movies about it since maybe Bloody Sunday, which is a Paul Greengrass movie. Basically, Jack O'Connell plays a – British soldier on his first day in Northern Ireland, thrown into the middle of the conflict. He gets separated from his battalion and ends up in the middle of the worst place to be, basically, you know, as various factions fight over who gets to kill him. And it's a great it's a really good action movie, first of all. It's like, it's one of those movies that, you know, it's funny, you would not think of a movie about Northern Ireland to be like a mainstream action movie, mm-hmm. but I think it works really well as an action movie, and I'm really kind of disappointed by the way it was handled by the studio. I felt like they really could have done better, kind of similar to Phoenix, but I ended up seeing it like a lot because it was at all these different festivals. It was at New York also, so I ended up seeing it like every chance I could get. So I saw it a lot of times. It's just such a really well made movie, great cast, and if you don't know anything about the Northern Ireland conflict, it does a really good job explaining it, which is one of the things we never really have seen in a movie. We just see a lot of different characters. We don't understand why they're fighting. But here we saw, like, you know, the fact that the Catholic, the Catholic factions are actually divided into two separate ones, new people and the old people as well. You know, so it was, like, really a very interesting film. But it has great action. It's great. I can't wait to see what this guy does next, this director does next. I'm a huge Jack O'Connell fan, too.
Nice. This sounds like it's right up my alley, or something I'd like. So
yeah, I hope you check it out, because I think it's I think it's something which I think you'd enjoy if you could find it somewhere on demand or on DVD or whatever.
Yeah, I'll have to hunt around for it, see what I can find. On the total side note, of course, totally exiting the obscure market there. My number five is Jurassic World.
It's my number four.
Ton of fun movie. I mean, leaps and bounds. It's the sequel to the movie that we've always wanted, to the first movie that we've always wanted. It just took 20 years to happen. You know, it's not much huge to say about the movie. It's a very formulaic movie. It has it doesn't try to break any molds, and it's just tons of fun. You get Chris Pratt doing what Chris Pratt does, and you know, because Ed, you talked about you mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy, and you know, he's just a likable, charismatic dude, and you know, I know my wife certainly loves to see him run around, get all dirty and have to take his shirt off. So, you know, that's something that she enjoys. So, totally, Jurassic World. Aaron, you said it was your number four.
Yeah, I like it because it's kind of a lightning rod for shitheads. And what I mean by that is I kind of love listening to all these people's, I like people like, another sequel, more CGI, them just taking a concept and, you know, making it more extreme. And I'm like, motherfucker, did you watch the movie? Because that's kind of what they're making a comment on in this movie. And I, mm-hmm. but I also liked a lot of stuff about it. And I think, you know, Ed nailed it when he's talking about nostalgia. Maybe one of my favorite nostalgic movie moments of the year was the T-Rex coming out to fight the I-Rex or mm-hmm. whatever the hell that thing was called. And I guess that T-Rex is the same T-Rex from the first movie. Mm-hmm. That kind of shit's cool to me. And I liked it. I mean, I thought it was a good movie. It made me sad when certain things happened. Somebody died in it, and I don't remember who it was. It was an actor I liked, and I don't know. But anyway, I liked the movie, and I liked watching it, and it was fun. I didn't actually know until recently that it did as well in the theaters as it did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. I mean like super recently, like in the last week. I had no idea it did as well as it did. But no, good. I liked it. So that's why it's my number five.
Oh yeah, it did exceptionally well. You know, it did. $650 million domestic and $1.6 billion worldwide. So, yeah.
There's no way it did $650 million domestic, did it?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It
opened higher than Avengers, the first Avengers movie, and mm-hmm. it was like, it just stuck. I mean, it did really well. Like
Then I'm lost. Where's that in the all-time list?
It's probably like number five or six, maybe, or four or five. It's below Titanic. It's below Titanic, but ahead of Avengers. But now it's completely overshadowed by Force Awakens. So,
well, yeah.
Sure.
Force Awakens just hit 800 million. So.
Let's see. Looking at all-time domestic or all-time worldwide?
That's domestic. No, but it was worldwide, and then they got overshadowed by Force Awakens. Force Awakens just beat it worldwide as well now. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I thought Avatar was at $670 million domestic. I thought that, but whatever. It doesn't matter.
Avatar's at $760 million domestic.
Oh.
Jurassic World is number four. Okay. Just behind Titanic.
Right. So I was just wrong. Cool. All right. No, but I liked it. I didn't realize it did as well as it did. I borrowed it on DVD when it came out. I'm like, hey, I liked that. And, you know, I had no idea it was like this big. It's kind of like what I'm talking about, how it's almost embarrassing because it's a guide of what is box office gold this year. Didn't realize mm-hmm. it, though.
Okay, well that's an easy segue. That was my number five. Aaron, that was your number four, right? Is that?
Yep.
So Ed, what's your number four?
Okay, well, quickly about Jurassic World. Jurassic World. I actually love Jurassic World, and it was in my top 25. It just didn't make my top 10, but I actually liked it a lot. I probably liked it more than some other movies. You know, some of the other movies we'll probably discuss. But I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of the Jurassic Park movies. I like all of them, and I really thought they did a good job. Mm-hmm. You know, taking what you like about those movies and adding new characters. And I was very happy with that movie. But anyway, so my number four is a movie called Ex Machina.
I want to see that.
Oh, yeah. I think you guys both really liked it a lot.
I've got it on my computer right now. I just have not had a chance to watch it. I really want to see that one.
I think you like
I've
it.
Heard this good things.
This is the debut from Alex Garland, mm-hmm. who wrote 28 Days Later. He wrote the Dread movie. He's written a lot of really cool science fiction movies.
And I love the crap out of Dredd, so.
Yeah, yep, he actually directed, this is what he directed. And I think it's funny, with Dredd, I feel like he actually kind of directed that, because the director ended up leaving, and I think he kind of ended up taking over, like post-production on that. But, I mean, this movie is basically about AI, or artificial intelligence, and it's the cast includes Domhnall Gleeson and Oscar Isaac, who you might have seen in Force Awakens. They actually were in this movie first. And it has Alicia Vikander, who, in my opinion, is the It Girl of 2015. She's amazing. She actually plays a robot named Ava. And the other two guys, Oscar Isaac plays a wealthy sort of Steve Jobs, but very eclectic kind of guy who basically is building robots, building artificial intelligence. And Domhnall Gleeson is basically called into his... he has kind of like a very weird kind of retreat in the woods. He lives by himself. He's very reclusive. And he brings Domhnall Gleeson to basically test Ava to see if she passes the Turing test. Basically, which is a certain test you can do to see if a artificial intelligence actually can be deemed human or computer robot. It's a really great movie. It's very, you know, has a great wit to it. It's very, it has some amazing, like towards the end, it becomes a thriller, and it's very much a thriller, and it has some very, you know, creepy moments, very funny moments. I think the cast, just mainly those three, were fantastic. And it's just those three in this complex. So it's like not a lot of big. It's not a big movie. It's a very small movie, but it's such a well written, directed, acted. I mean, it is my number four because it really blew me away, and it's blown me away every time when I've seen it again. So.
Very nice.
I think you both like it too.
Yeah, I desperately want to see that one. I just haven't had the time or been in the place where I can give it the attention that it needs. You know, I need to actually. I assume it's a movie I need to really pay attention to when I watch.
Yeah, I'd say it's a good movie. You want to really really watch it. It's definitely for sure.
Yeah, that looks really cool, and I like Oscar Isaac and everything I've seen, and that actress Alicia Vikander, is that what you said her name was?
Yep.
I remember then seeing her later in Man from U.N.C.L.E. So.
Oh yeah.
And so that's cool. So number four on a going the kids routes, it's definitely the best kids movie I saw this year. It was Pixar's Inside Out. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a very Pixar. You know, this movie really hit home for me because I grew up. And my dad's bipolar, and so we've dealt with those sorts of things a lot before, and my wife has dealt with it, and it's just that sort of resonated with us, just sort of how they handled it. My wife, being a psychology major, she got a lot from it too, because of how they dealt with emotions, they dealt with all that, and it just was, and being a parent also, you know, really really sort of I don't know, this movie just really really struck a chord with me. I really really liked it. I thought it was I thought it was just a very very heartwarming movie for me. So I mean, not much more to say about it, but Inside Out.
Yeah, I saw that one too. I was tempted to put it on my list, but I actually have another kids movie on my list that we'll get to in a minute. I liked it. I think that it's just Pixar doing what they do best. I think it was nice that they, you know, fought the temptation to just make sadness the bad guy in the movie, you know, versus saying that this is just something you're gonna have to deal with.
Yeah.
And you know, I liked that about it. It's a good movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah. I'm assuming you saw that one, Ed.
Yeah, I saw Inside Out. I saw the first half. I actually went to Pixar last year, probably April, May. I don't know when it was. April, May. I don't know. When it went early, and I saw it early, like the first half very early. So I was kind of on board. I liked it. I kind of feel like it's the same boat as like Up, where I really liked the first half a lot, and then seeing the rest of the movie. I mean, I definitely think it's really good, but I didn't think it's great. I think I have these things that are funny the first time and don't really work as much the second time.
Sure, and I've only seen that one once. So I don't know how well it would hold up on a subsequent.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I think it was high.
Mommy's downstairs.
Up on the Pixar list, but it was below like Wall-E and Ratatouille and some of the other ones I like better.
Well, let's move on then. Aaron, what's your number three?
My number three is actually going to be the kids' movie on my list. I decided to put, I do admit, and I will say that I think that, I do think that Inside Out is the superior movie, but, you know, I have to be true to myself and I have to be true to my reaction. And I think maybe one of my strongest reactions to a movie was with this movie, and it was with Pixels. I think that the best thing I could say about Pixels is with that movie, I got what I was wanting out of Wreck-It Ralph. You know, I liked the fact that there was, you know, these, you know, they were these video games that I were aware of that weren't necessarily in the periphery of the story. You know, I am aware that I'm putting a Adam Sandler movie on my list, but it's okay. I liked the movie. I enjoyed it. I thought that it handled the nostalgia of video games well, and I liked it. You know, I mean, it just comes down to I liked it. It was just big, dumb fun. So, it's my number three.
Yeah, okay.
Did you see it?
I did not see Pixels. I did not.
Okay. I did see it. And I got to say, I didn't hate it. I think a lot of critics really just kind of jumped on it. What's going on there?
Sorry, that was my car.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. So, I mean, I saw it. I didn't hate it. I thought it had some enjoyable moments. I liked the, you know, liked the aspect video games of it. And I think it was terrible, but I think a lot of critics kind of just jumped on it and really unfairly, I thought. I think it was directed by Chris Columbus, who's made a lot of really good movies. Not all of them are great, but I mean some really good ones. And I feel like, I don't know, people just saw Adam Sandler and said, okay, this movie sucks, and they didn't give it a chance at all.
I agree with that. And, you know.
And I thought it was disappointing that it didn't do it better, because I thought it could have done better if, you know, people who realized that there were people would actually like this movie didn't just blast it.
See, and I watched it, and, you know, I think the thing, one of the most annoying things about this podcast to me is our most commented upon and our most downloaded show of all time is our We Hated These Movies podcast that we did. We did it as an April Fool's joke.
Yeah, we did that as an April Fool's joke, and people ate it up. And, you know, we've always wanted to talk about things we like and not things we don't like. So it's just a bit more fulfilling. But I would agree. I mean, basically, you see Adam Sandler in a movie, you automatically are expecting it to suck. 9 times out of 10, you're correct. I was one who suffered through that that one where with Adam Sandberg that he did. Such is life.
But also the Cobbler, which is another movie by Tom McCarthy, who directed Spotlight. I mean, that came out. It was not a great movie. It was not a very good movie, but it was not terrible. But people just they completely railed on it, even when it was at Toronto, and it was all because Sandler was in the movie. And the same thing went with Jason Reitman's movie the year before. Exact same thing. That was not a bad movie. It was Men, Women, and Children. Not a bad movie. Adam Sandler was in it, so it gets trashed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's he definitely has a lot of bad press and a lot of baggage that is associated with his involvement in anything. He doesn't do anything really to help his image, but it is one thing that just not something that we want to see more of. It's good to see. You know, it's good to. I actually didn't know that Chris Columbus did Pixels. I was one of those, like, the movie came out and said, "Hey, it looks interesting," and then it just started getting blasted by everybody. I was like, "Okay, I'll just steer clear of that for a while." Then
that's what happened with me with Chappie.
Yeah,
okay. It was just getting blasted, so I didn't see it, and then I ended up just seeing it, you know, randomly, and I really liked it, so that's why I put that one on my list. Yeah, yep. Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying.
And that's why I should never. That's why I should never trust critics.
Yeah,
I don't.
Those guys are just you know. Just,
they're the worst.
They're the worst.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was your number three.
Three.
Ed, what's your number three?
Mine is it's funny. It's kind of related. I remember a couple years ago when I got sick and we had this podcast about cancer movies.
Oh yeah.
So and then this is actually would fit right in with them. This is called Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. I saw it at Sundance where it won both the jury award and the audience award. And it's funny because it's sort of like you watch the movie. And it seems like a very typical high school movie, like we've seen at Sundance a lot. I can't name any off the hand, but there have been a lot of high school movies at Sundance. They really like that theme. But basically, it stars Thomas Mann as this guy, Greg, who he's kind of like an he's not an outcast as much as he, like, he's kind of a deliberate outcast in high school, where he basically kind of gets along with everyone, but doesn't really fit in with any group. And he basically, his mother convinces him to spend time with a girl who is a dying girl in the movie. She's named Rachel, who has leukemia, and basically starts hanging out with her, and then his friend Earl starts hanging out with them, and they basically, Earl and Greg, they make these really funny kind of movies. Like, I don't know if you saw, did either of you guys see Be Kind Rewind, by any chance? The Jack Black movie?
I'm familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah, but they make these kind of homemade, really low-budget movies, and they basically make them based on great, you know, the big, you know, Citizen Kane and those kind of movies, but they basically create, like, a pun, like, based on the title, and they make a basically a movie. So I can't remember any of them offhand, unfortunately, but it's a very funny little sidebar to this movie, which is very, I mean, it was very poignant. I mean, obviously, because I had leukemia myself, I feel really close to that thing, but then also at the same time, I started Sundance, and then the second time I saw it, I actually had a friend who was also, had just gotten cancer, and she was dealing with that, and also another friend, another person had died of leukemia, like, days before. So that was kind of in my mind the second time I saw the movie, and it was already my number one movie of the year. Other movies have replaced it, but I mean, it was my number one for a long time, and it was really sad. I mean, I watched it again. I mean, it's hard to watch it without just tearing up a little bit, because it's a really well-made emotional movie, very funny, very, you know, unique, but no, it's also very, I mean, it is, you know, it's very real. It feels very real, which I think is something we haven't really, don't really see in those movies as much, you know, as we should.
Mm-hmm. Well, awesome. I'll have to check that one out. I do also remember seeing a trailer for that at some point too. So
yeah,
that's interesting. Aaron, have you heard of that one?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it, but I actually have heard of that one. I think, you know, we're getting somewhere that I've actually started hearing about these.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, it got a lot of awards attention. I just didn't get when it came out. It just didn't really. They have a hard time selling it. I was telling Searchlight that they should really, like, kind of get some clips out of those. Kind of those homemade movies, because they're very funny. And I think that would have been a better way to sell the movie, because people would be like, "Oh, that's really funny. I want to see what these idiots are who make these funny movies." You know, but didn't happen.
Drama? What? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my number three. Aaron was talking about kids' movies, and this certainly is not. It's the Tarantino's Hateful Eight. One of the movies that I managed to sneak in under the wire just this last week, and. I've grown to be quite a Tarantino fan, and I'm also a huge fan of Westerns. I have not seen, and also oddly a huge fan of Kurt Russell, so this had a lot of things going for it for me. And just that the when I was sitting there watching this movie and realizing that it was essentially Quentin Tarantino doing a Western version of Clue, was enough for me to really get into it and enjoy the performances of the movie. You know, everybody in the movie has the chance to do to really perform. You pretty much gotta love seeing actors like Tim Roth and Samuel L. Jackson and of course Bruce Dern have screen time together and actually, you know, be able to act and perform and have great dialogue and have great interactions. And then, you know, it pretty much anything that gives work to Kurt Russell, I think, should get a huge thumbs up from me, and especially if it's a Western, because the man's born to be in Westerns. I know Aaron has more to say about this one. But the one guy in it that really surprised me, and he shouldn't surprise me after, because I've seen the entire run of The Shield, was Scoggins. And he was the guy who was going to be the sheriff, and he's just an actor I really enjoy. I just like to watch him do stuff. I just think he's a lot of fun. He's really good. Ed, have you seen that one?
Hateful Eight. Yeah, I've seen it about three times, four times.
Oh, excellent.
I've seen a lot. I actually saw it twice in theaters, and I saw it once on a screener. And it's funny. It's a movie that, like, probably. On my third viewing, it really slowly kind of crept up my list of the movies of the year. I mean, I ended up not making my top 25, but it probably would be in my top 25 now after seeing it a few times. The first time I saw it, it was very hard for me to get into. The second time I saw it, I definitely appreciated it more. Mm-hmm. And then by the third time I saw it, I'm really a complete, you know, I'm fanatic. Actually, it's funny. I actually have the because I'm in the Critics' Choice Awards. I actually got a screenplay book. Which is a screenplay of the movie.
Cool.
And have you both seen the movie, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. There's one chapter, it's like the four which is like the later chapter, the four passengers. That in the screenplay, that's actually it's probably about 20 minutes longer.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They actually did it all. And I haven't actually read through it yet, but I was just kind of paging through it. I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. They really take that scene much longer than in the movie. And I'm like, it's good they cut it out because it's a very long movie. But I mean, just that, I think it's one of those movies that like other Tarantino movies where I think it'll be like play well on repeat viewings. So
nice. Aaron, I know you've seen it and you had something to say about it.
Yeah, I'm not going to stand on ceremony. It's my number one.
Okay.
My thing about this movie is, of course the Tarantino movie is going to be Aaron's number one. I don't know if it's clear to Ed, but everybody else knows, or at least if you listen to the show, that Tarantino is my favorite living filmmaker. I love everything he does. I mean, I just do. And my thing about it is I have a strange relationship with him. You know, like to when I first saw Pulp Fiction when I was, 12 or I'm sorry, 14, then, I thought that, Tarantino, somebody I'd really like to know. And then I got, when I got to be, 25, I realized that I don't really think that Tarantino would like me very much. And then I get to be 35 and I realize, well, the truth of the matter is I don't think I would like Tarantino very much. I mean, as far as a person goes. Now, as far as a filmmaker goes, I love the fact that he's really good at Frankensteining a movie together. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ethan said it reminds him of Clue. I think that's a little bit oversimplifying it. To me, it reminded me of a weird ass mix between like Rio Bravo and The Thing. And yeah. I can't really put my finger on why I say that about The Thing other than the claustrophobia of the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And one of
also,
my
also Kurt Russell in the setting also probably helped too.
Yeah. Well, that too, and the snow and Kurt Russell, yeah. Clearly, since we're talking about movie spoiler alerts, and that's the last time we're going to say it, it's starting to crack me up that, not only can Kurt Russell not make it through a Tarantino movie, he can't even die a fucking dignified death. I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Kurt Russell.
I love watching Tarantino kill Kurt Russell. Go ahead.
Yeah, Kurt Russell just can't get a break in a Tarantino movie, yet he keeps doing them, so hey.
He must like doing it. I think walking into it and out of it, my favorite thing about it, was Jennifer Jason Leigh. And my thing about that is I've always been like a crazy sucker for her. And I've always said that like her, I think when we did our favorite performances of all time, I think I had her performance in Hudsucker Proxy as one of my all-time favorite performances of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that it didn't get any nominations or didn't win anything or anything, but I just loved that performance. And I've always said that she's just an amazing actress, and I thought that this proved it to me. But I also saw it, backed up with the script and a movie with some juice behind it, and I wouldn't be surprised if she got nominated for an Oscar for it. Did she get nominated for a Golden Globe? I don't know.
Hudsucker Proxy?
No. For The Hateful Eight.
She did. She dominated.
See, I'm not surprised. She's fantastic in that, and she was great in it. Samuel L. Jackson was great in it. Kurt Russell was great in it, and I just love Tarantino movies. This is the one I have seen more than once. I mean, I watched it twice in 2 days. It just, I enjoyed the setting. I liked it when she sang that. I don't remember who sang that song. Was that Bob Dylan?
No. The song she's saying is like an old Australian movie song, which actually the song was actually written after when this movie would be taking place. So it's kind of weird that she would be singing that. But there was also a White Stripes song in there, and that was way after the Civil War. So.
Yeah. But I also know that there's like this. I mean, Tarantino's always got these moments in his movies where he pulls me out of them because I just get struck by something that's just so familiar to me. And I think that happened to me when she would singing that song, and then they had all this stuff going on in the background, and they had Kurt Russell walk by, and it really reminded me of Rio Bravo, like the hero shot of the hero in the middle of the song. You had that going on with was it Ricky Nelson and John Wayne and Rio Bravo?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then she had it with Jennifer Jason Leigh and Kurt Russell, and I loved this movie. I really loved this movie. I'm not surprised that I did, but I mean, he's just good at speaking to what I want to see out of a movie, so I loved it. My number one.
Fair enough.
This is going to work out just fine because when we get down to, go ahead and give me a chance to talk my number ones when we get there in the order, and you'll understand when we do that. Okay.
All right, no problem. Ed, you said you've seen this one a few times at this point.
Yeah, I saw it like I saw it way early, like probably one of the first people to see it, like back in November. Mm-hmm. And then I saw it again, like a little afterwards. I went to a press conference with Tarantino and the cast, and that was really interesting. I don't usually do press conferences, but because I wasn't coming soon, you know, when they did the press, I just said I'll just do the press conference. But I mean, I think I agree. I think Aaron Tarantino is a great filmmaker. As a person, he's sort of about as annoying as his characters. He just talks and talks and talks. You know, I mean, I kind of have a love hate thing. I was curious, Aaron, where did Django place on your top 10 that year?
Number one.
It was number one, okay. Because I watched Django again recently, and actually...
I love Django Unchained. Yeah. I'm a little bit too obsessed with that movie. I bought the Blu-ray, I watched it a lot. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I liked it a lot. I mean, I liked it a lot when I saw Django, but then I saw it again more recently since seeing Hateful Eight, and I definitely like Hateful Eight more. I think Hateful Eight definitely... When the first time I saw it, I didn't think it was up to Django, but then I saw it again, I realized it was a better... it was a more concise version of Django, which was a little more, a little more sprawling. But also, I hate Christoph Waltz, so this was that too. So
you hate Christoph Waltz, huh? That's too
bad. I hate him as a person. So
sad. I like him in Tarantino, but that's about it. That's too bad.
Obviously, Tim Roth character would have been Christoph Waltz. He could have been Christoph Waltz, the Tim Roth character.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I see, and I don't have to deal with Christoph Waltz as a person, and I just like him as an actor in Tarantino movies. So it works for me.
Yeah, and I like Django Unchained just fine until I sat through 12 Years a Slave, and then Django Unchained became the best movie, one of the best movies that about slavery that I've ever seen. So,
dude, that's a fucked up thing to say, and I like it.
I despise 12 Years a Slave, so I had to watch Django Unchained to wash it out of my mind. Jumping off of that, that was your number...
that was my number one, so we're getting into...
we're getting in our
and
mind.
That was your number three. Your number three, so we need Ed's number three?
My number three was me and Earl.
Right.
We need Ethan's number three now? No, that was... We need Aaron's number two.
Hateful Eight, so we're at number two. So, Aaron, what was your number two?
My number two is Star Wars. I don't really feel the need to talk a whole hell of a lot about it. I liked it. I think that if I did this in a week, it might be my number three. And if I did it another week, it might be my number four. Because I don't like its fans, and I'm just learning more and more and more that I'm just not one of them. But I liked it. I thought it was a good movie. And I hear what everybody says about how it was the movie everybody wanted when the prequels came out. I get it. I disagree with them, but I get it. But I still liked it because at the end of the day, it's a Star Wars movie. There were lightsabers in it. Chewbacca was in it. It had R2-D2 in it. It was a Star Wars movie. I love Star Wars. I really liked I liked the inclusion of the new characters. My favorite of them was Finn, and I liked it. So it's my number two. We're doing a standalone Star Wars show, so I'm not going to go on too much about it, but it's my number two.
Yeah, I won't add too much to it. I also agree Finn was my favorite new character, and I enjoyed the movie quite thoroughly. It's quite thoroughly entertaining, and Episode 7 is my number 7 on my list. So
makes sense.
Of course, obviously, Ed, I assume you've seen this one.
Oh, yeah, I saw it. I actually saw it again recently. It did make my top 25 or top 10. I mean, it was good. I liked it a lot. I mean, it made my top 50, I guess. But that's
cool.
That's because I saw 400 movies last year, so.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. I did like it. I definitely understand if you're a fan of the Star Wars franchise, I think you like it. I am a fan. I mean, I'm more fan of the original two or three movies. But it definitely is an improvement from the prequels. I can't wait to see what happens next. It just didn't make my top.
Sure. Anything. Sure. Well, what's your number two, Ed?
My number two is a movie you probably heard of because it's been getting a lot of awards buzz, and it's a movie called Room. A movie I saw in Toronto.
Yep.
It had already gotten a little bit of from Telluride a couple days earlier, but it kind of came out of nowhere. I feel like I first heard about it when A24, the distributor, announced that they were handling it, and it was at Toronto. But seeing with an audience of Toronto, it was just such a moving film. It's about Brie Larson plays a woman who was kidnapped as a teenager by a man who keeps her trapped in a wood shed or some kind of garage shed or something. But he keeps her in a shed, and after a couple of years, she actually gets pregnant, has a baby, And the story kind of starts 5 years later when this kid is named Jack, is 5 years old, and his mother finally decides, you know what, we're going to break out of here. And they basically, you know, decide to fight back against the kidnapper and get out. And it's really about this relationship between mother and his son, both in the room and out in the world, when they go out in the world and Jack sees the world for the first time. And it's an amazing film because most people don't remember what it was like coming out of the womb when they were born. But, seeing this five-year-old experience in the world for the first time, I mean, it was so powerful and so dramatic and emotional. The movie has humor. I mean, the kid is Jacob Tremblay is absolutely amazing. He's just very entertaining. It's really kind of a lead role, although he's being, you know, I don't know if he's getting any awards attention compared to Brie Larson, who is probably going to, you know, win everything because she's a, you know, pretty good-looking 20-something actress. But yeah, Room is a great movie. I can recommend it highly. A great movie to see with your wives or girlfriends or whatever. I mean, I think it's. I think most people who've seen it have really been blown away by it.
I haven't seen it. I want to see it, but I'm going to say this about it. I wanted to get all the attention it can because I'm really amused by the idea of somebody going to try to see Room and they wind up seeing The Room instead. And I kind of love that idea. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like he's getting a lot of that. Jacob Tremblay is getting a lot of nominations and occasional wins from film critics associations, like Chicago, Detroit, Central Ohio, Broadcast Film Critics, etc. So,
I don't know why they ever bother giving out awards to kids that age. And I'm not trying to be shitty about it, but like whenever they do it, nothing ever comes of them. I mean, can you say that about Tatum O'Neal? I mean, she had a career afterwards. But, like, you know, when you look at, like, Justin Henry from, Kramer versus Kramer, you know, nothing ever came out of him. And, you know, it's just funny to me that there's ever really those conversations about, like, a 4 or 5 year old kid in contention. I don't know. Well, whatever. I mean, I guess it's supposed to be the best of the year. It's not supposed to be an overall thing, but it's just strange to me when children are considered in that conversation too. But I digress.
Yeah, and me personally, I actually haven't heard of this movie at all. So
yeah, oh, wow. I have. Okay. I've definitely heard of it. Uh-huh.
Oh, you will believe me if you watch any of the award shows, you will have heard of it because it will be. It might only win like Best Actress, but it's going to get nominated for a lot of things. So
yeah, I see it's got three Golden Globe nominations. So
yep.
So nice. Sweet. All right. Well, that was
number two.
Ed's number two. My number two is another fairly mainstream one, but it was one I enjoyed, and I really enjoyed showing it to my wife and my kid, my oldest daughter. It was Mad Max Fury Road. I am not a huge Mad Max fan. I grew up, I saw Mad Max, I saw Road Warrior, I saw Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, and I thought, they're all right. I really liked Road Warrior, and that was about it. This movie just really cracked me up. I sometimes you just need a good post-apocalyptic, high-octane, crazy, insane movie, and this pretty much hit that vein for me. I really liked the storytelling, and it was just was epic. It was a little preachy, but Mad Max movies tend to be preachy. So, I told my wife when I went off to see this movie, or when I got back, like there I was watching this movie, and when this came out, a lot of menaced groups were protesting it because of the high content of high power of really strong female characters, for a lack of a better way to say that. And I said, yeah, I saw this movie, and the funniest thing is my penis fell off. So,
it happens.
So this movie was a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed it. It had a really cool story. It was just fun to watch, and I just really, really liked Mad Max Fury Road.
Aaron, did you see it, or?
I did.
I was surprised it wasn't in your top six, to be honest, but that wasn't in my top six. I was surprised it wasn't in your top six.
I just, I saw it, and I thought it was a pretty movie, but, it's just not, I don't know if it comes from the fact that I don't care about Mad Max, that I'm getting tired of Tom Hardy, that, I you know, saw the periphery of all this feminist stuff about it, and I saw it, and it was fine. I don't really have any need to see it again. I don't necessarily get all the praise. I mean, I admire the fact that George Miller directed that movie at, like, what, 70?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get all that stuff about it. It just, all that stuff together doesn't add up to a movie that I love. And I do feel, clearly I'm in the minority there, because everybody loves this movie, and I just didn't get it. It just didn't do it for me for whatever reason.
Yeah, fair enough. Ed?
It's like, just missed my top six. It's like my number seven movie. Mad Max, the first time I saw it, because I saw it fairly early on, as usual. And I saw it fairly early on, but there was already, like, a lot of buzz coming out of it. And at first when I saw it, I was kind of like, yeah, that's okay, but it's the story is very simple. It's like a chase. She drives off across the desert and then goes back. And it's like, wasn't a hugely complex story. But, I mean, it really is – I mean, there is stuff – I mean, I think what I like about it is that it's original, very unique story. It's like he creates this world, and he created this world for those other three movies – but he basically created a movie that goes back to that world, but doesn't rely on nostalgia. All those other movies like Jurassic World and Terminator and Star Wars, they completely relied on the nostalgia for those other movies. This was Mad Max Fury Road was like literally its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, Tom Hardy was I liked it a lot. I mean, it was really Charlize Theron's movie.
Yeah.
But I think the thing about Mad Max Fury Road is the first time I saw it, I was kind of like, oh yeah, this is pretty good. I like this. And the second time I saw it, I was like, yeah, this is pretty amazing. And by the fourth or fifth time I've seen it, I mean, I've seen it a lot.
Good God,
really,
I guess.
It really – well, the funny thing is one of the times I saw it was on an airplane. I was going on – I think it was recently, actually. I went on a flight, and I was watching on this little tiny screen, and it worked just as well on that little tiny screen as it did on a big, huge, you know, movie mm-hmm. theater. So it's like that's what – to me, that's a movie that really stands out. When you can make a movie, a big screen movie that works on a small screen – you've made something really, you know, great. And I think, you know, got George Miller, God love him, 70 years old, hadn't been in this world for 30 years. You know mm-hmm. what? It's a fantastic movie. I think it definitely deserves to be in most top tens, and I hope it wins awards, you know, right and left.
Yeah, I got that suspicion it's going to win technical awards, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
I think George Miller might win director.
Yeah, I think he'll win director, and I think we'll see the Golden Globe is giving some love tonight, too. So,
oh, that'll be nice to see. Well, let's get into our number ones a bit. Aaron, your number one was The Hateful Eight. Was there anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, there is something I need to add to this. Every single year that we've done this, Ed brings up the fact that he's kind of got a 1A and a 1B because he does like his favorite movie and his favorite doc. I'm going to do something as akin to that because of the fact the movie that I want to put on here, although it might be my favorite movie of the year, I can't in good conscience put it on the list without a big old asterisk next to it, and that's because it's not even a full movie, it's a short. But what it is Kung Fury. If you have not seen Kung Fury, I feel bad for you. Basically what Kung Fury is it's this weird-ass little independent short. I think it's 30 minutes long or 40 minutes long or something along those lines. And it's just this stupid-ass story about a kung fu cop that has to stop a time-traveling kung fu Hitler. It's got a character in it named Triceracop. It has Thor. It has time-traveling. It has a computer nerd from 1980, and they use 1985 internet to go back in time, and it's a...
Ethan, are you still there?
Things like that. Yeah, I'm still here. Are you?
Yeah, you're...
Yeah,
you jumped down for a second, yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. But yeah, it's my number 1A because I just really liked it, but because it's a short, I can't put it on its own spot. So it's my 1A, but I loved that movie. It was fun to watch.
No, I have not seen Kung Fury. I have it on the computer. Have not had
it. I haven't seen it either. I've heard of it. I've never seen it either, no.
It's trust me, it's not going to change your life, but I thought it was a hell of a lot of fun.
Okay.
I thought it was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, that there's your 1B. Ed, give us your number one.
Okay. Well, now, see, I wasn't going to do a 1B, but now that Aaron has, I will quickly mention a documentary. Quickly mention, because I wasn't going to do it, but I went anyway. My favorite documentary was Bad Kid Begins, which absolutely wonderful movie. Another one in dealing with leukemia because the kid had leukemia. But basically, it's about this kid who made a make a wish thing to be a superhero, and the entire city of San Francisco basically got together and said, "Let's make this happen." And you probably saw some of the news on social media and stuff like that. But the movie is fantastic. They basically somehow this director came about, showed up like late to the game, like after it already happened, and assembled this amazing amount of footage, which shows, you know, this kid, I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but that shows this kid training, you know, it's just really wonderful to see, you know, it's like similar to Room, being able to see, I mean, you guys are fathers, so you know this, but I mean, being able to see the wonder in a kid's face is just, it's magical. And those, like Room, that was a movie that really showed this kid, you know, really believing that he was, you know, Bat Kid, and he was helping Batman fight crime, and just seeing like the people come together to do something good for one person. I mean, we just don't see that often. So that's why Bat Kid Begins is my favorite doc, even though it's not getting nominated for anything. And I'm the only one who saw it, I think. But
I've heard of it, and I wanted to see it. That's the one I have heard of and wanted to see, but I have not at this point.
Yeah,
and I will.
It got a very low-key release. It got a very low-key release, and, you know, Warner Brothers released it, and they don't really do those kind of movies, and I think they released it just because they own Batman. So,
yeah.
But anyway, my real number one movie, though, is Steve Jobs. I'm sure you've heard of Steve Jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully you've heard the movie. But basically stars Mike Fassbender as Steve Jobs, and it's directed by Danny Boyle. And it's a very talky movie. It's basically like a play. It's a three-act play. And it just deals with Steve Jobs, you know, having conversations with his most trusted friends and allies and later enemies. And it's just a really great portrait of Steve Jobs in a way that it kind of doesn't candy coat him or make him seem like a great guy. But it really shows that, you know, this is a guy who has a vision, and he basically fought for that vision and, you know, lost a lot of friends because of it. But, I mean, the movie is just – it's really amazing – Basically, a three-act play staged, you know, filmed. And just knowing, you know, what was involved with making the movie the way it was, which included, like, 10 days of rehearsal per act before they filmed anything, it really comes out. It's a great film, very entertaining, very interesting if you're into computers or Apple or any of that stuff. And it's kind of enlightening, too, and I really like that a lot. So Steve Jobs, number one for me.
Excellent. I kind of steered clear of it because
I want to see it.
I don't really care about Steve Jobs that much, but I actually had no idea Danny Boyle did that movie. So
there you go. That's how good the publicity was, even though I interviewed Danny Boyle, but I didn't get it.
Was originally attached? I'm sorry. Who was it that was originally attached to it that left?
Oh, Fincher was
to direct it.
Fincher was supposed to direct that one.
Yeah, Fincher.
And at one point, Leo DiCaprio was supposed to star in it, too. I mean, there were a bunch of actors attached and a bunch of directors. And Fincher and DiCaprio were the last ones before Danny Boyle came on, and then he got Fassbender.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
it's got a great cast.
Very cool.
The rest of the cast is great, too. I mean, it has Kate Winslet as Jeff Daniels, Seth Rogen in a rare dramatic role. Very good. Yeah, it's a great movie. I recommend it highly.
Excellent. No, I have not seen that one.
Totally check it out.
I remember seeing trailers for it, but I have not seen that one. All right, my number one actually kind of surprised me. I just really enjoyed it. It was Bridge of Spies.
Wow.
The new Spielberg movie. Spielberg and Tom Hanks. It kind of reminded me of why I like Tom Hanks and why Tom Hanks is, you know, a good actor. And why Steven Spielberg is a damn good director. And when he Steven Spielberg gets behind the camera, he generally turns out something that's you know, well put together and just a good movie. And I'm kind of a sucker for a historical period piece like that, you know, that's set in the Cold War, set in the 50s, set in the 60s, that sort of thing. I I guess I'm kind of a sucker for it. I really liked Tom Hanks in it. I thought he was pretty much doing what Tom Hanks does, and that's in a Spielberg movie, and that's be really, really good. So I was kind of surprised again that this reached the top of my list, but it did. I don't have heck lot more to say about it. But Bridge of Spies, it's Spielberg doing what Spielberg does best, and it's make it a good movie. Aaron,
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen that one, Ed?
Yeah, I definitely saw it. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I liked it a lot. I think I probably would like it more on a second viewing, but I think it was just very slow. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like it wasn't Spielberg's best movie. I didn't think it was Tom Hanks' best movie. I did Mark Rylance, who seems to be getting the most buzz mm-hmm. for that movie, and I thought it was a decent script. I thought it was okay. There's just such a good year for movies. Like there were mm-hmm. so many movies I liked more than that, and it kind of came along and kind of was good. And I think just being good was not enough this year. So
yeah, I'd agree. We've talked about years before in movies where it's just like these are the best movies out here this year, and it just says that the movies this year kind of sucked. Really though, the dramatic stuff and the award fodder that they put out this year seems like they really put out a lot of good stuff. And there's a lot of good stuff to watch, a lot of good stuff to choose from.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I think it was a great year. And also, I'm actually impressed that Bridge of Spies made your list at all, because it would not if I thought of the 18 movies you would have seen last year, that was not one I would have assumed. But I know you're a Spielberg fan, so I guess that would make sense.
Yeah, and it just hit with me. And you know, sometimes Spielberg does something I'm not a huge fan of, or just when I'm like, yeah, that was good, but I like these others better. And for some reason, I just really, really dug Bridge of Spies. I thought it was really good. So,
you're not the only one, so don't be.
I'm not surprised you liked it at all.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not surprised you liked it at all, Ethan. It strikes me.
Let's go ahead and do our 10 movie rundown. Aaron, why don't you give your rundown, and we'll stick a fork in this.
Will you do me a favor and go first?
Sure, I will go first. My number 10 was Joy.
Thank you.
Number 9 was The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Number 8 was Ant-Man. Number 7, Star Wars Episode 7. Number 6, The Martian. Number 5, Jurassic World. Number 4, Inside Out. Number 3, Hateful Eight. Number 2, Mad Max, Fury Road. And number 1 was Bridge of Spies. Ed, why don't you give us your rundown?
Very cool.
Aaron's pulling up. Aaron, are you ready?
Kinda. Just let me wing it, if you would. My favorite, my number 10 would be Helen Keller versus Night Wolves. It was stupid. I liked it. My number,
is that a real movie? 9
would have been, yes, it is. Okay. It is a movie that was made by St. James Street James. It's a farcical movie. I don't know if you ever heard of Pull Boy Drowning Out the Fury or FDR American Badass. He is the visionary director that brought us those gems. Well, he also brought us Helen Keller versus Night Wolves. Okay. And it was stupid, and I liked it. My number 9 was Sisters. That was that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler movie where they played sisters and hijinks ensued and stuff. Again, it was fun. I like to see the two of them together. It's appropriate on Golden Globe night, although she is not, they are not hosting it, but it's still there. So that's my number 8. My number 7. My number 7 is a weird one that I put on here. I put it on here because I didn't like it, but I did. I'm of two minds of it, but I wanted to talk about it. It was like that weird horror movie called Unfriended. It was basically Skype the horror movie, where there's a whole conversation going on over Skype and stuff is going down and they're killing people. It just kind of reminded me of the same vein of something like a Blair Witch Project or something like that, only in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then the list I just went over, which was Chappie's my number 6, Ant-Man's my number 5, Jurassic World's my number 4, Pixels my number 3, number 2 is Star Wars, my number 1 is Hateful Eight with the 1B of Kung Fury.
All right, well, Ed, what's your rundown?
Well, first of all, I want to mention that Man of Monkle would have been number 11, mm-hmm. and Jurassic World would have been number 13, so both those movies are in my top 15. They're very, very close, but number 10 is a movie called Love and Mercy, which is you might have heard of as a the Brian Wilson movie with Paul Dano and John Cusack. Mm-hmm. Number nine was Mississippi Grind, another movie from Sundance that was basically a poker movie about with Ryan Reynolds and Ben Mendelsohn. Mississippi Grind is a very entertaining movie, very, very good. Number eight is Sicario, which is the latest movie from Denis Villeneuve, mm-hmm. who had my number one movie a few years ago. Number seven was Mad Max Fury Road. Number six is Phoenix, as mentioned. Number five is 71. Number four is Ex Machina. Number three is Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. Number two is Room. And number one is Steve Jobs with a 1B to Bat Kid Begins as my favorite dog.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it's definitely very good. A good and interesting year for movies in 2015. I look forward to seeing what 2016 has to offer. Hopefully Aaron and I can get out to the theater a little bit more often.
I think any perceived deficits in the movies this year, at least from my perspective, is the deficit in myself more than the movies. So I just didn't see anything. I mean, I saw the stuff that the machine told me to watch. But beyond that, no, I just didn't see much. But I am going to watch the stuff that Ed recommended, especially Steve Jobs. Now, Ed has been talking about Steve Jobs for months. I don't know if you see it on Facebook, but he really dug it, and I've been wanting to see it, and I just haven't. I just haven't had the time, but I'm going to make it happen.
It's a fine – like that and Room are fine to watch on DVD. Even Me and Earl and the Dying Girl also. I mean, a lot of these movies I mentioned are fine to watch on DVD. They're not like the big screen experiences like Star Wars or Mad Max. So, you know what? Watch it on DVD or watch it on, cable, whatever.
I will. I'll figure it out. I
also want to add, for last year, as far as the box office, I mean, people were going to movies because, the top three movies made $1.3 million domestic just by themselves, mm-hmm. more than that, actually. And that's $1.3 billion, I should say. And then there were three other movies to make $300 million each. So that was a pretty damn good year for the box office. I don't think we've seen a year that good in, actually, ever. So, it'd be amazing if...
I doubt it. I mean, I don't know that there's going to be a moneymaker like Star Wars again for a really long time. And, and it certainly isn't going to be the Rogue One isn't going to attract the kind of attention Episode 7 did, but I guess we'll see. It'd be interesting. And as much as people like those Marvel movies, and as much as people like Batman, I don't see Batman versus Superman or Cap 3 just beating those numbers. I mean, it's almost a fluke.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, even the fact that Age of Ultron is not the top movie of the year when maybe most people thought it would be is pretty amazing. That's the number three with over $450 million. It's like, wow, okay. Still, usually the top movie, last year I think the top movie made $330 million. So, we had like five movies.
Really?
We had five movies this year beat the best movie last year as far as box office.
Mm-hmm. What was that? I wonder what that movie was.
I think American Sniper ended up winning last year.
You know what? I think you're right, and that's such a weird one.
Oh, totally. And it made most of its money this year, too. That's the funny thing. It made almost all its money in January, over last year, January 2015. So.
It's just going to be interesting. I remember you kind of... what was it that you were hating? Oh, you were hating on Iron Man 3, and you were saying that it's not really the number one movie of the year because it was actually Hunger Games because it came out in December. I mean, I just kind of wonder what discussions are going to be about, that in terms of Star Wars because, Star Wars made most of its money in December, right? Or no, I guess it couldn't have.
No, it did. No, it definitely did. No, I mean, it only made it's going to make like $150 million in January, but still, It already made $650 million before that, so.
Are you going to retract your statement that I saw on Facebook, Ed, that you don't think it's going to make $1 billion domestically?
It's not going to make $1 billion. I still think it's not going to make $1 billion. It's already dropping.
I don't know either. I've heard... No, I agree with you, but people are being stupid. I've heard people think that it's going to beat the all-time with inflation, and I think that's an insane statement.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
With inflation, it would have to make another $1 billion on top of what it's made right now.
It'd have to make about...
No, I agree with you. I don't think it
will. It's impossible. I mean, you have to think... If it's made $800 million so far, And it's made $41 million this weekend. It'll have to make at least $200 million more to make a billion. And, I mean, right now, I mean, if it's making $41 right. million this weekend, it's going to keep dropping because there's other movies coming out. It's going to keep dropping. I mean, I think it might end up with $900 million, maybe. That's about it.
Well, it's definitely going
to
be...
I read something like...
Go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to say, I read something that said that... No, I was reading something that said that it doesn't look like Star Wars is going to be number one at the box office this weekend. It's going to be Revenant, I think.
It's still one. The Force Awakens won the weekend.
Was Revenant close or something like that?
It's pretty close, but the Revenant would like dropped off, like, made a lot on Friday and less after that. So
okay.
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely going to be a good year financially. It's going to be a good year for Disney.
And Universal too.
Well, yeah.
As you know, Star Wars and Marvel
basically.
All right,
before
basically
we go, we do need to keep up with our tradition.
Okay, go ahead.
We got to keep up with our tradition. We got to keep up with our tradition.
Okay.
And that is the movie we're looking forward to most next year. What's that?
I'm gonna have to say Doctor Strange. I'm really looking forward to that.
Is that next year?
That's this year.
And that's my number. That's what I'm looking forward to most. Also.
Yep, yeah, I'll go 3 for 3. I'll go 3 for 3 on that too. That's also my number one. So
I'm a fan of the character, and I'm a fan of Benedict Cumberbatch, and I just expect that one to be a lot of fun.
I'm a big fan of Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah,
It's gonna be a big year for. This is gonna be a big year for Mads Mikkelsen because he's gonna be in Doctor Strange and he's gonna be in Rogue One. So I guess we'll see
really? I didn't realize that. Wow, I didn't realize he was in Rogue One. But
Ed needs to be getting to watch some Golden Globes.
Yeah, I gotta go. Yeah, yep. I'm happy I've met Mads Mikkelsen very early because I met him for when he was doing like before Casino when doing Casino Royale, and he gave me some poker tips. So that was like Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, really?
I've known him for a while, and it's just so great to see him. Like, you know, it's cool. I hope with these other movies like really put him on the map. Like, even though Casino Royale should have done that.
Yep, he's my nominee for the new Christopher Lee.
Oh, nice.
Okay, that's quite the praise coming from you, Aaron.
Yes, it is. Okay. He's got a very similar career. He's got a really interesting life, and you know he's also 40. So I mean, maybe we get another 50 years of awesome out of him. Who knows? Yeah,
maybe. All right. Well, I think we need to stick a fork in this then, and call it good.
Yeah.
We're gonna close out 2015 books and just look forward to 2016. So. I guess that leaves me just being Ethan.
I'm Aaron.
And of course we've got Ed.
Okay. Bye.
And let your geek flag fly.
Thank you for being on, Ed.
No problem. By the way, have you guys seen this? Either of you seen Creed?
No, I have not seen Creed.
Oh God, I think are you Rocky fans?
So. I love the first movie.
I'm not especially a Rocky fan, but I did. I think that I thought Sylvester Stallone was awesome in it. And, you know, like, I have the same aversion to Michael B. Jordan as everyone else, but he was really good in it. I cannot deny that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's probably
I liked it. Did you?
Yeah, I did like it. Yeah, it probably would have been my top 25. But anyway, I'm gonna run. I only asked that because I saw Sylvester Stallone on the red carpet because he's nominated for Golden Globe. So.
All right. Well,
okay.
Take care. Enjoy.
Well, good luck
enjoy
to
the Globes, Ed.
Guys, thanks a lot. Great talk again. See you later.
Take care.
Hey, bye.
All right. Thank you, guys.
I got to run, Aaron. You take
care. Bye.
In a world where it's only available for download on GamersHavenPodcast.com. The Gamers Haven Podcast presents Mutants and Masterminds, 3rd Edition, Justice City United. Featuring the Gamers Haven regulars Eric, Jeremy, Robin, and Tracy. GM'd by Ethan. In a world of superpowered intrigue, can four heroes trust one another while trying to make a difference? An alien threat, a complacent government, and a sinister villain are only some of the obstacles these four need to overcome in order to be some of the world's greatest heroes. Will they be legends, or will they be forgotten? Only time can tell. Justice City United.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.